Everybody, welcome to Two Off the First. It is May the 1st, 2023. I'm Ryan Bellinger. I am 40. It's great to be here with you today. Hope you had a great weekend. Thanks to those of you who emailed or commented or texted or whatever, sent birthday wishes. It was really appreciated. I usually don't make a big deal of my birthday, but hey, we had a party for once. It was lovely. Now let's get back to the business of golf. We had a great weekend of golf. Hopefully you got to catch some of it. I mean, obviously a full slate from the PGA Tour to the DP World Tour to the LPGA Tour, Corn Ferry Tour, Champions Tour, LIV. I'm sure there was something I missed otherwise, but golf everywhere. And this is a really kind of an interesting time of year for that, where we start to get to the weeks where there's five or six tours in action. Most weeks it can get kind of exhausting, but there's always something to follow, and some good stories came of it. I think we're going to start with Tony Finau becoming a six-time PGA Tour winner. He won the Mexico Open at Vedanta by three shots over Jon Rahm. Interestingly enough, if you look at the 2 years of this event at Vedanta, you've got leaderboards that are the same with the same three players. You have Brandon Wu in there, you have Jon Rahm, and you have Tony Finau, part of the story in each of those years. And Akshay Bhatia was part of it this year, locking himself up a tour card, which is pretty cool. I think a lot of people are excited about that for him. And this weekend was, it was great golf. I mean, if you look at what Finau did, he shot 65 basically every round, two 65s, a 64 and a 66 to wrap everything up. It really was never, at least in my view, in doubt on Sunday. I mean, by the time you get to the back nine, the tournament was practically over. Although I did find it interesting that Finau said after he had won that he didn't think he had had it won until he hit the green on 18. And I don't know if I've ever heard a response to the question like that with that kind of answer, where he didn't really think he had it in hand, even though he had a three-shot lead. It was clearly over to everybody there. It didn't even look like Finau's family was on pins and needles about him winning. And it was done. I mean, it was over. As soon as he hit the tee shot on 18, it was over. I mean, it was probably over three holes before that. But I think it's interesting for a guy that has won, what, five times in less than 2 years, that he still does not have the mindset that he has won the golf tournament until it's basically over, until there's two putts left. And I don't know where that comes from. I don't know why that is. I don't know if that's a mindset change for some golfers as they become more prolific winners. If you ask, like, Jon Rahm, for example, because he was there to defend his title and did a very admirable job, shot, what, 61 on Saturday, set the course record. But if you ask Jon Rahm, when does he know he has a tournament won? When he's got a sizable lead, not like a one-stroke advantage, not maybe even two is not big enough, because we'll talk about that with the Corn Ferry Tour, but that's not necessarily enough to guarantee you're going to win a tournament. But if you're winning in a relative runaway, three or more, right? If you are looking at that as a player who wins a lot, do you think, okay, this thing's over by the time I've gotten to that lead? Are you that cocky? Are you that confident, that assured that you've got this? Or do you still have the mindset of a Finau where it's like, this is not done. You are not done. This whole thing, the trophy is not yours until you have demonstrated you really can't mess this up. And I think that would be an interesting survey. I don't think you'd ever really get an honest answer from everybody, because that's a little bit of mind games, I suppose. But really, Finau was wonderful. Played steady golf. The guy's won now twice in the season. He won the Houston Open in the fall. Very similar courses. Pretty long. Can kind of hit it, not anywhere. There's some trouble, but more or less can hit it anywhere with some degree of impunity. There was a reason he came into the week as the second favorite for the tournament, and he played like it. And now has, again, five wins in the span of less than 2 years, like 20 months. And if you look in the span of less than 12, he's got four. So the guy's on an incredible tear. He's starting to become the guy I think most people thought he would be, a prolific PGA Tour winner. And he's doing it in a fairly short period of time. That's excellent to see. I think Tony Finau is universally liked and loved, and by his peers, by fans. So the next step, obviously, is logically a major championship. When I'm thinking about majors, I'm not thinking Tony Finau to win the PGA, given who did well at Oak Hill 10 years ago when Jason Duffner won. But I could look at him at a U.S. Open, because LACC is not exactly wide open, but it's not very narrow either. And depending on how the USGA chooses to set it up, that could be the spot for Tony Finau to break through and win a major championship. Either way, incredible turnaround from a guy who had a lot of hard luck losses and didn't play particularly well in final rounds to a guy who's figured out how to play well in final rounds. If you look at Data Golf, if you're familiar with the site datagolf.com, they're great. They do a wonderful job. Look at their Twitter feed on over the weekend, and they give a great, maybe it was from today even, they give it a great comparison to Tony Finau when he was unfortunate or on the bad side of variance at a lot of PGA Tour events where he had a chance to win. And now he's been on the right side for last year plus and has found a way to win tournaments, not only by playing better in final rounds, but not being caught by players who might be unlikely to catch him at the start of the final day. So things working out better because he's a better player, but also just some things are going his way too. And that's how you become a five-time winner in less than 2 years. That's how you become a six-time PGA Tour winner. That's how you transform your career. It's happened for Max Homa and Tony Finau in about the same amount of time to about the same number of wins. And interestingly enough, they battled each other in a playoff at Riviera. Maybe Tony Finau gets there someday too, but congratulations to him on that win. Over on the LPGA, Wilshire Country Club is one of my favorite venues in televised golf. It is absolutely fun to watch. It's a classic course, classic Southern California course wrapped around a barranca with all of the holes kind of making you think about that feature. It's a classic, shorter course that really wouldn't work well for male professional golfers, but it's great on the LPGA for the JM Eagle LA Championship, which is kind of confusing because they renamed this tournament because JM Eagle got involved and they put up a $3 million purse and it was great. But the LA Open was really where this tournament was played, now called the DIO Implant LA Open. Well, that tournament name is now affixed to Palos Verdes, which was supposed to be like a one-off, one-year tournament, and now the tournament's there. So in terms of lineage, you have the tournament that is the LA Open plus this one, and it came down to a great finish on Sunday. Once again, Nelly Korda gets kind of close, but not close enough. Seems like short-range putting has been an issue for her this year, and there's been some study about that, about what has caused her to come up short a couple of different times. Almost kind of like a Spieth-like effect, like inside of 10 feet. If she were just a little bit better, she'd probably have two or three wins on the season already. Nevertheless, some drama on the 18th hole, which is a par 3 at Wilshire. You had the eventual winner, Hannah Green, make a 20-25-foot putt on the final hole to make birdie. She sits around for the better part of an hour. Xiu Lin and Aditi Ashok, who Aditi's already had a great year winning on the Ladies European Tour, they make birdies both on the final hole, forces a three-way playoff, which that's awesome. And then you get to the playoff, Hannah Green wins. And when you watch Hannah Green play, she looks so cool and calm and collected, like nothing's bothering her. I mean, you know that people have emotions, but she's trying not to project that, kind of like a 2000s Tiger copycat pro, like the pro who would barely acknowledge, like almost like a Chad Campbell, like, okay, bud, we know what's going on here. We know you're not the best ever. We know there's a lot of great golf in you, but you're not Tiger. Don't act like that. But Hannah Green's almost kind of opposite Australian in the way that she looks on the golf course. Maybe more like Adam Scott, who doesn't show a whole lot of emotion. And after she had won, she really got emotional, started crying a little bit. I mean, she's had success. She's won over in Australia in these intervening 4 years since winning the major championship when she won the Women's PGA Championship. And then she won the Portland Classic later that year. And then COVID hit, and she talked about it afterward, but she was talking with Karen Stupples from Golf Channel and just kind of let it all out that the last few years have been really hard for her. And if you look at the data, you look at the results on the LPGA of players who haven't won basically in the time span from when she last won to yesterday, she has more top 10s than anybody of the players that haven't won. She gets there really often, but as she said, winning a golf tournament is extremely difficult. And she had to really fight through it, and she was very proud of herself for fighting through it and figuring out a way to win. And just kind of letting all those emotions out of 4 years of frustration, knowing that she's good enough, knowing she's capable of winning really any tournament on the LPGA. She's just a great, great player, and not being able to do it. And she was one of the few people that I've ever seen acknowledge the impact COVID had on her game, because she had a breakthrough year in 2019. And then she said, well, I defended my title in front of no people in 2020. And that seemed to really bother her. She mentioned the, quote, COVID lifestyle, which obviously was a lot of singular travel, a lot of check-ins, a lot of probably difficult alone time for someone who I don't think thrives on that kind of thing. And that may have stunted her career a little bit, and it took her a little while to get back. 2021 wasn't the best year. 2022 was largely good, but without a win. And now she's back in the winner's circle. So very cool for her. Three LPGA wins. A very good tournament for the LPGA. They moved to San Francisco this week. They have brought back the International Crown, which is very exciting for them. It's a team-based competition. 8 teams, 4 players. Qualified based on the total ranking of your 4 best players in your country that would play. And added them all up, and that's the seeding. Well, unfortunately, there was some news today that actually made me audibly react to the email, and that does not always happen. But Georgia Hall and Charlie Hull, who are playing for the English team England, they both withdrew from the tournament today. So they are replaced in the field by 2 more English players, Alice Hewson and Liz Young, who will round out the field. Alice Hewson's a good player on the LET. Never really has done much here in the United States, but she's 178th in the world. Liz Young's 222nd in the world. Well, Georgia Hall is 10th in the rankings. She's had a great year so far. And Charlie Hall is 18th. And both of them pulled out of the tournament. Starts Thursday, TPC Harding Park. I would have given them a good chance to win going into it. Now, obviously, not so much. Georgia Hall said she's been battling a left foot injury, which, hey, that might explain why it didn't work out quite as well at the Chevron Championship. And Charlie Hall said she's just been dealing with, like, stomach issues and been ill for the last couple of weeks and is going home to see a doctor, which, that's unfortunate. I mean, this has been positioned as a big event on the LPGA, has been treated as such the few times that it's been played. First started here in Maryland at the Caves Valley Club, which is a great place, and then they had it over in Korea, and that was a really enjoyable tournament. So to have it back after COVID, and this isn't supposed to be an every year thing either. So, unfortunate situation, but the event goes on. The headliners are obviously the United States and the Republic of Korea. Those are going to be the 2 best teams. I think Sweden can be a sneaky fun team to win. Australia could be a fun team to have as well. So England may have a lot of ground to make up, having Hall and Hall out of it against Hewson and Young being part of it, but it'll still be a good event. That starts again Thursday. It's team match play, and you have a group play, so you have 8 teams. You have pool play Thursday, Friday, Saturday, so you have 1 match each day. Each team plays each other once, then the 2 best teams, based on the match results from both the pools, they go out into semifinal format. They play against each other across pools, and then you have a final match on Sunday as well to determine the champion. So, good event. Really fun to watch. Something to watch on the West Coast time zone, which is great too. Opposite Wells Fargo, which is in Charlotte this week, is a designated event. That's going to be a great tournament this week. You're going to have Rory McIlroy as the headliner. Unfortunately, Jon Rahm and Scottie Scheffler have chosen to use this designated event as their skip event. So they'll be throughout the rest of the summer and all of the remaining ones, but they chose this one to walk past. I think Rahm knew that was probably the likely scenario for him. Obviously, the Masters champion needs to slow down a little bit. He kept up his commitment to go play at Harbortown. Rory McIlroy did not. He also defended his title in Mexico, which, if he had won, there's no other reason for him to play that tournament. So that's why he's taking this week off. Totally understand that. Scottie Scheffler, I'm not going to fault him. I mean, he's been wonderful. He's been brilliant this year. no reason to get on his case about it, but this is the one he's going to choose to skip. So you have McElroy as the clear favorite, clear headliner. You've got Patrick Cantlay next best. You've got Xander Schauffele. You've got Max Homa, who's won this tournament twice, once at Quail Hollow, once around here last year. You've got a really good field otherwise. Fitzpatrick, Spieth, Finau's playing. You got more. It's going to be, 38 of the world top 50 in the field this week, which is a pretty awesome event most times of the year. Maybe a little disappointing to not hit that 40 threshold for a designated tournament, which has kind of been that number you've been at least 40 to 42. But there's also been some change in the world ranking because a couple of live guys played their way back into the top 50 or so of the world. Brooks Koepka, Patrick Reed. So knocked a couple of others out, which makes it a little give and take there on that top 50 ranking. If you are curious on LIV, Taylor Gooch is the first guy to become a back-to-back winner on LIV. He won the event at Sentosa Golf Club in Singapore, won the playoff over Sergio Garcia. And then some other guys were in contention. Scott Vinson, Brooks Koepka, Cam Smith, Phil Mickelson was in there at some point. But for Taylor Gooch, a couple of very lucrative weeks for him, above and beyond whatever price he got paid to join LIV. Now he's made $8 million individually in the last two tournaments. That's life-changing money, on top of life-changing money for him. He is going to be in the PGA Championship, even after he complained earlier in the week on a podcast about being what he thought was retroactively screwed out of an invitation to the U.S. Open. Turns out that wasn't true. That was never true. But now he's in the PGA Championship for sure. And the PGA Championship going out of its way to kind of find individual players to make invitations to that they think are going to contribute to LIV or contribute to the PGA Championship from LIV. He's one of them. Anirban Lahiri is another one of them who's playing pretty well this year on LIV, I think, based on the results that I've seen. So they're going to try and kind of pick and choose their players who they bring in to fill out the field for Oak Hill in a few weeks' time. So maybe Taylor Gooch will have an opportunity to play himself into a high finish, top four finish, get you into all the majors next year. So if he could do that at Oak Hill, he would find himself in good position for the remainder of the year. Ben, really emotional win on the PGA Tour Champions. Steve Alker won. He won the Insperity Invitational, successfully defended that title at the Woodlands, the apparent mecca of professional golf lately, but successfully defended his title there. Congratulations to him. He lost his caddy earlier in the year to terminal cancer, which really sad story, but dedicated the win to him. And that was a great finish. On the Korn Ferry Tour, kind of a confusing finish. Ben Silverman looked like he was going to have this thing in hand at the Hometown Lenders Championship in Huntsville, Alabama, and then hits his tee shot on the 18th hole, goes into a hazard, has to drop, makes double bogey to fall into a playoff with Ben Coles, but even worse, no one really knew, so when Silverman made the putt, apparently his family like walked out as though he had won, and then he had to tell him that he didn't win and was going to a playoff, and then second playoff hole, Ben Coles hits his approach shot to like 2 feet, tap in range. Silverman can't make his birdie from 15, 17 feet. And Ben Coles is a two-time winner this year on the Korn Ferry Tour. Very interestingly, when he turned professional, he won twice right away on the Korn Ferry Tour, got to the PGA Tour, has really bounced up and down ever since. Definitely going back to the PGA Tour now. Silverman, same thing. Already won this year. Looking for a second win that would have been a capper, but that's not the case. But he's still in good shape for the remainder of the year. So big event there. And then in the Korea Championship, Pablo Larrazabal is now an 8-time DP World Tour winner. He won by a pretty comfortable margin. I think it was 2 in the end, but tough scoring week at Jack Nicklaus Golf Club in Incheon, South Korea. But Larrazabal is a winner, and he's won all over the place. The DP World Tour sent out a really interesting kind of schematic listing, whatever, of where he has won. He's pretty much won everywhere. And I didn't even know he had that many wins. I mean, I knew he had probably a handful. Didn't know it was 8. So it's been an interesting year on the DP World Tour so far because there have been a lot of players after, I feel like last year, a lot of young guys started to step in the spotlight or newer faces. You've had some older guys kind of come back. Not necessarily that they're old, but experienced guys. Larrazabal winning, Olesen winning, Joost Luiten getting some great finishes, kind of coming back to the form of the guy that would be on a Ryder Cup team. And I know in prior Ryder Cup years, you're like, oh, here come the Europeans. They always play well in Ryder Cup years. Well, a lot of those guys went to live, and frankly, they're not playing as well, although Sergio's playing well lately. And that doesn't seem to kind of the same weight to it because of LIV, I suppose. But some of these younger guys who might see an opportunity to get onto that European Ryder Cup team with Luke Donald, who has six captain's picks, just like the American side and Zach Johnson, that will be interesting to watch, especially this week because the DS Automobiles Italian Open is at Marco Simone Golf Club, which is where the Ryder Cup's going to be played. So if you play well at the Ryder Cup venue, which has hosted the last couple of years too, but if you're playing well in that venue, you would think Luke Donald would look at you and think, well, you know, he won there. Maybe there's some value to that. So the Højgaards are in it. Bob McIntyre is the defending champion. None of the European Tour stalwarts are in it because they're all playing the designated event for $20 million. A couple of guys to look after other than Olesen Leuten might be Yannick Paul, who's played great. The German player has really shown himself to be a tremendous ball striker. The guy was playing the Outlaw Tour a few years ago and is now one of the better players on the DP World Tour. Would not be shocked if he winds up being one of those 10 players who gets promoted to the PGA Tour from the DP World Tour. And then Alexander Bjork, who's a great ball striker, kind of falls off a little bit sometimes in later stages of tournaments, but might be developing into a better player, more complete player than he has been. So that was the week in golf. That's the week ahead in golf. And that didn't even get into college golf, which we've got to talk about. We don't do a whole lot of that on this show, but certainly something to talk about. There'll be plenty to talk about tomorrow, I'm sure. I assume Rory McIlroy is going to talk in front of the media, try to explain why he didn't play Harbortown or what's been going through his mind recently and what all of that means. We shall see. I'm sure we'll get some more talk around LIV and the world ranking and all that stuff, because it really only matters to them to get into the major championships. They don't care about the world ranking otherwise. And I'm sure there's lots to come this week. So if you listen to this show as a podcast, and you can do so, I'd love you to leave a nice review for us, leave a comment, helps us reach more people. Email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Questions, comments, thoughts. If you watch this show on YouTube, thanks for doing that. If you would consider smashing that subscribe button and the like button, leave us a comment. That helps any which way you can do that. If you watch or listen to us any other way, thanks for doing that, making us part of your day in some fashion. We'll be back tomorrow with another show. Full week of golf here in the world of golf. We'll be here to talk through it all with you. I'm Ryan Ballengee. Thanks for watching or listening. We'll see you next time on 2 of the First.